You know, there's nothing quite as calming or maybe awe-inspiring as looking up at that vast night sky and seeing the planets and the stars and the other astronomical wonders. But even though we can appreciate them for their raw beauty, it's also really nice to know what we're looking at. Paul Ginzer is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's an active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. He provides a service called Seeing Stars, and that service helps adults and children develop an appreciation for the night skies. Comes by a few times a year to be our guide to this fascinating world of astronomy. And Paul, thanks for coming by again today. Great to see you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And you've been a busy guy this summer.
Yes, this summer the library theme, every year the libraries have a summer theme, and this year it's nighttime. So I'm going around with my portable planetarium. I'm going to libraries all over the state, and still got a few left, but it's kind of starting to wind down a bit.
And that portable planetarium allows people to kind of see the night sky.
Right. Oh, yeah. During the day, it's an inflatable dome. It's 10.5 feet high by 16 feet wide. You crawl through a tunnel to get inside, and then I have a projector that projects the stars onto the inside of the dome, and it's very dark in there until the stars come out.
It's wonderful. We can talk some more about that, but I want to get into the Perseid meteor shower, because that's coming up.
Yep.
And for once, well, the peak time to watch, I think, is on a weekend.
That's right. The night of August 11th. It's a Saturday night, and this year is also good because often during a meteor shower, there will be a big moon in the sky, and this year there will be a moon, but it won't rise until after midnight, and it'll be a crescent, and the moon can wash out the light of meteors. And this is, in some ways, probably the best meteor shower of the year because it happens in the summer. There's a lot of them in November and December that might actually even have more meteors, but who wants to be out at midnight staring up at the sky in the middle of December?
Yeah, absolutely. And a meteor shower, somebody said, what is a meteor shower?
Well, a meteor is usually a grain of sand or a small pebble hitting the Earth's upper atmosphere and burning up. We're going around the sun at over 20,000 miles per hour, and they're going around the sun too. And usually when they hit our atmosphere, they're going 50,000 miles an hour, so they burn up. And they're there, we now think, most of them are from the tails of comets. Comets are big balls of ice and dirt and rock that, for some reason or another, they come in, they float towards the sun, and as they do, they start to melt, and they leave stuff behind. And the meteor shower is when we're plowing through that trail of debris.
And it's anything in particularly special about this Perseid event, or?
Not that I'm really aware of. They're getting better and better at predicting when the peak will be, but they're not always right. So they're typically best after midnight, but the Perseid meteor shower, you could actually go out probably right now and maybe see a few early meteors. And the thing with a meteor shower to do, sometimes people have asked me, what kind of telescope do I need for that? Well, you don't want any kind of eye, nothing in front of your eye. You just want to look at a wide swath of sky in the darkest sky you can find.
Yeah.
And you'll see them.
And, you know, a caller called in to ask you to talk about dark sky areas that might be available between Madison and Milwaukee.
Oh, boy. First of all, I'm from the other side of the state, so
yeah,
Larry might know more about that than me, but you're probably not going to find very dark skies between Madison and Milwaukee. You go north of there, and the further north you go, the better it's going to be, probably, because you're just getting away from people. And the further you are from people, the darker the skies are going to get.
Yeah, it's. I was just trying to think in between Madison, Milwaukee, what parks that might be available. They're probably. I take a look at the parks that are available. At least you get a little bit of separation if you're in a park area where at least there aren't buildings lit right near you.
Right, right. One issue with parks, sadly, though, is they close.
They close.
You know, and right now at this time of year, later this week, I'm going to do a star party for one of the libraries where we'll actually have telescopes outside in the dark. But it doesn't really get dark until 10 o'clock. It's getting dark earlier and earlier as we're going around the sun and getting towards the fall. But if the park closes at 10, well,
so you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah, lots of them, though, if you ask ahead of time, they're pretty nice about police. Sometimes in some towns, the police will even, or who's ever got the keys, they'll turn the lights off. So
which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions or comments. Are you an amateur astronomer or just looking at the night sky? What fascinates you? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question, a comment, or even a nice photo. If you got a night sky photo, we'd love to see that as well. That's at the Larry Mueller Show. The Curiosity rover will attempt a landing on Mars on August 5th. What does that mean for people interested in astronomy?
Well, to me, one really cool thing is a video that NASA has made, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. There's a video out there right now called 7 Minutes of Terror, and it's pretty dramatic, and it is dramatic, all about the landing of that rover on Mars on August 5th. And people have used Rube Goldberg to describe it, those very complicated way of getting down to the surface. And that video, which has gone viral, if you just do a Google search for that, 7 Minutes of Terror, Curiosity, it's just a very complicated landing. And this rover is the biggest rover ever sent there. It's as big as a small car. It weighs a ton. I tell kids, it's got a laser that will burn rock, and that's pretty impressive for them.
Wow.
And they burn the rock to put some vapor in the air that they can then examine and find out what is that rock made out of. But this one has a nuclear engine. It's designed to last quite a while and go quite a distance.
And hopefully it won't. Does it have a way to right itself if it tips over?
This one, well, the two rovers that are there, the design is somewhat similar, just smaller. And one of them, they were meant to last 90 days. One's been going for over 8 years, and it's still going. The other one, you know, after a while, the wheels got stuck, and it died. But hey, it's pretty good.
Pretty darn good. Chris in Oshkosh, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
I was just going to observe. I am an airline pilot, and recently my company has added a few destinations south of the equator. I've been flying some trips down to Lima, Peru. And a couple of nights, 2-3 weeks ago, was very, very happy to be able to use one of our cell phone applications, actually, Starwalk, to kind of orient myself with the southern constellations and enjoy seeing the Southern Cross for the first time. Mm. Unfortunately, we didn't have a stereo on board and couldn't cue up the Crosby, Stills, Nash, but it was still kind of an awesome sight.
Yeah, lucky you. I've never seen the Southern Cross. I've never been that far south.
Maybe, thanks a lot for calling, Chris. Maybe you can explain, what is the Southern Cross?
Well, it's a very bright constellation that you can see in the southern sky, and I never have seen it, but when you get in the Southern Hemisphere, you can see the center of our galaxy much more clearly than you can from here. And you can see the stars that are closest to the Earth better than you can from here, Alpha Centauri. And the Southern Cross, I frankly have always kind of thought it should be called the Southern Kite, because it's really, it's more of a diamond pattern. There's no star in the middle of the cross. So,
can I add a short comment?
Sure.
Not a real student of the night sky, but, of course, I spend an awful lot of time at 35,000, 40,000 feet at night underneath that canopy and looking at the more familiar constellations. There was really, when we headed south, and, of course, you're experiencing an entirely different set of stars, a different night sky, and there was actually, you know, I don't know if it was psychological or real, but there's sort of a pervading sense of oddity about it all.
Sure.
It was utterly unfamiliar.
Yeah, I bet. Uh-huh. I mean, especially if you have looked at the sky to look up and, wait a minute, it's a different sky. You're like on another planet.
That's, you have the best seat going.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Well, that was cool. And he mentioned Star Tracker.
Yeah, and I always feel embarrassed when people ask me about apps because I don't own a smartphone, so I can't really talk too much about that, and I know you can, Larry.
I have that Star Tracker 4S, which is It's absolutely amazing.
You can point it up right now, can't you?
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at. It's the middle of the day, but that's what's up in the sky.
Yeah, it shows what's up in the sky, and it's really, really, really fun.
Yeah.
It makes it a lot more fun.
And just a few years ago, there were little things made by a couple of companies that you would pay $300-$400 for to do that, and now you can, you know, how much is an app online?
A couple of bucks.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Diane in Hubbleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, I just had a question or a comment about finding a dark space to view the meteor showers.
Yeah.
We live out in the country, and, you know, obviously we just go out in our driveway and turn all our lights out. But any place you pull off the interstate and start driving down a country road, you're going to find a cornfield with no lights around it. And if you can park safely, you got your night sky.
Yeah, and that's sometimes the issue, parking safely. And
but there is a really great place outside of Hubbleton, which is halfway between Watertown and Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
Right off of Hubbleton Road, there's a hill that is DNR land.
Ah.
And it's got a great pull-off. It's right off of Hubbleton Road, off of 19, between Watertown and Waterloo.
I've been there. I've been over there. Hmm. That's a good...
When we've seen the Northern Lights, we've hopped up and gone up there to see it, because it is a hill overlooking a marsh, so it's completely dark.
Yeah, that would be a great spot. Thanks.
And what I've done where I live is, I went around knocking on doors, driving during the day for farms that looked like they're up high on a hill. Where I live, there are a lot of hills. And just knocking on doors and saying, would it be all right if I came here at night and looked at the stars? And I found one who said, yeah, sure, come on up. So that's another idea.
Another way to do it. Thanks again for calling. Mark in Superior, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hi. I'm 24 now. When I was 15 years old, me and my dad went out where we were getting ready to go hunting. It was opening day, and we walked outside. Really early in the morning, completely dark, and we had a meteor shower, and it was a really intense meteor shower. Later on, we heard that the last time that this meteor shower was seen was it was above the Gobi Desert, and so we felt really fortunate to watch it. But I was kind of wondering if it's a recurring thing. What was the name of this meteor shower? It would have been 9 years ago in 2003.
And would it have been in November?
It was in November, it was in the La Crosse area, actually, like Melrose Mineral area.
I saw that one, too.
Yeah, the big one is the Leonid meteor shower in November, and the thing about the Leonid, it usually is the night of November 17th, we plow through, I think it might be Comet Halley's, most people say Halley's, it's Halley's Comets, but I might be wrong about that. The thing about that one is, I am wrong about that, so forget that. But the thing about that one is it really varies from year to year. Every once in a while, and they can predict this, we go through a thicker part of that debris stream. And in 2001, it was especially intense. And 2002, I drove all the way to Nebraska because it was supposed to be intense again. And it was amazing. Even as the sun was starting to come up, I could still see meteors.
Yeah, that was
something that we noticed too, because we were we finally packed up our gear after it seemed like about a half an hour of watching the shower, and finally made it out to our stands, and we could still see them going as the sun came up.
Yeah. So probably for people west of here, where it was still dark, a couple hours west of here, they must have had some show.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Appreciate the call very much. I'm usually up north in the middle of the Shawamigan National Forest at that time and have seen the meteor shower many times. It's really always...
Yeah, and just that one was, I think, what people maybe expect, where every few seconds you're seeing a meteor. But in a typical meteor shower, you might only see, you know, if your eyes, if your eyes are wide open and you're lucky, you might see three or four in a minute. But that one, it was almost constant.
Paul Kinzer, our guest today, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's our guest today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Judith Sears-Poisson is our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Kinzer. We're talking stargazing with him today. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can post a photo or ask a question on my Facebook page as well, at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And I had a Facebook question from Philip. I'll be camping in Colorado first week of September. My camp's at 9,000 feet. Any tips for viewing the sky at that altitude?
I guess the main thing I would want to say is you lucky dog.
Yeah.
The higher you are, the less atmosphere you're looking through. If possible, the thing I would want to look at is objects that are dim, objects that possibly you couldn't see lower down as well. The Milky Way would be amazing, and right now is just a peak time to see it. It'll be crossing right across the top of the sky, right over your head, and get a pair of binoculars. And, you know, if you have a telescope, look for the galaxies and nebula. But if you have any pair of binoculars, just sweep the Milky Way. It'll be just intense and amazing.
Yeah, that was very good advice. Email from Lois just last Friday. A friend gave me her Galileo GMEC Psi Astroterrestrial Refractor Telescope to use rather than collecting more dust in her garage. I live in town here in La Crosse, but on the river. Gives me a pretty good view of the western sky at night or very early in the morning. Wondering what you think of this telescope and what I might get to see using it here in town.
Well, the thing I always need to know about a telescope to tell people what they can see is its aperture. What's the diameter of the lens or mirror? I'm assuming since it's a refractor and I know the company Galileo, it's probably fairly small. I would say the thing to look at, especially if you have a view of the western sky, is the moon and planets. And right now, Mars and Saturn are in the south and southwestern sky as the sun goes down and it gets dark. Frankly, Mars is so far away from us now and it's such a tiny planet, it's not really worth looking at, except just to say, hey, there's Mars. It looks like a yellowy-orange star. But to its left, above a bright star, is the planet Saturn. And even a small telescope will show you its rings. And I've been telling kids this summer in the planetarium, it is so cool to look at Saturn through a telescope. Maybe the coolest thing. It really does look like what it is, a ball floating in space with rings around it. And even through a small telescope, you can see those rings. They're opened up now. And right next to Saturn, you'll see one of its moons, a little tiny dim star. That's the moon Titan. And one more thing to remember is right now, there's a satellite there that we sent there. Cassini. It's been there since 2004. It's taken pictures 24 hours a day. And that moon Titan, that little tiny moon nearly a billion miles away, we landed a probe on it. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too. Oh, and going along with, I think, this last comment, a nice question, I think, about children. Nicholas asked this on Facebook. I want to get my daughter into astronomy. She's only three. I'm not really interested in sports, but love science. Any ideas for someone so young? I want my kids to have a love of science like I do.
Well, constellations. I think even a three-year-old, constellations. A lot of kids that young, they have a hard time looking through a telescope, putting their eye up to an eyepiece and seeing it and understanding or getting their eye where it needs to be. Same with binoculars. But if you can go outside and show them the constellations and tell some of the folklore behind it and then, you know, talk about what are the stars really. There's a great book called The Stars, A New Way to See Them by H.A. Ray. He wrote the Curious George books to help you find them. He wrote one for younger readers called Find the Constellations. And something that will really help, although you do need to be careful with it, is a green laser pointer. Because it'll make a little thin beam in the sky so that you can actually point the patterns out really clearly. And then the last thing is a planisphere or a planisphere. Some people call them a star wheel. If you just look that up, they're available for very little money. None of this would cost that much. You can get the books at the library. That's what I would suggest.
Good suggestions. Bob in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for waiting.
Hi. Hi, Larry, and your guest.
Hi, Bob.
This past weekend, I was camping at Harrington Beach State Park, and there is a club there that has built an observatory with a 20-inch telescope, and many of the other club members come out and set up their own telescopes out in the parking lot. So you can wander and around, and the club members will show you what they're pointing at.
Sure.
And the 20-incher was trained on Saturn, and it was a beautiful, clear night.
Oh.
I don't know the name of the club, but I bet through contacting Harrington Beach, I bet they do.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm not quite sure myself, so I don't want to say, but I've heard of that telescope. There are astronomy clubs all over Wisconsin, all over the U.S. If you just maybe contact the physics department at a nearby college, or just Google your town's name and astronomy club, you will probably find one. My astronomy club, the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, they have periodic get-togethers too, where they go up to a dark sky site near La Crosse, and they bring their telescopes and they'll talk to people about not just what they're looking at through them, but about telescopes and astronomy in general. Typically, amateurs love to share and get people interested in this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Bob, thank you.
Okay.
And Bill in Madison, hi to you.
Hello. Just so as not to mislead people, Titan is not so small. It's bigger than Mercury. It's bigger than the Moon. It's almost as big as Mars.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I implied that by saying it'll be a tiny dot through the eyepiece. But you're exactly right. It's the biggest moon in the solar system. The reason we could land that probe there so easily is Titan's so huge. It has an atmosphere. It's a fascinating, fascinating place.
But the reason I call is. I was a very serious young amateur astronomer when I was, for example, in high school. I ground my own telescope. I grounded my own 8-inch mirror for my Newtonian reflector that I built.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty serious about it. I lived in Washington State, which has a lot of parallels with Wisconsin, and that it has a very similar geographical area and similar population. It's about 6 million people, but has 49 counties, but 5 million of those are in three of those counties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a vast, vast, vast expanses where there is absolutely nothing and nobody.
Yes.
And so, I it was an astronomer's, an amateur astronomer's dream come true. And I found since I've moved to Wisconsin that I've sort of lost interest because I can't find any place within reasonable driving distance, where the light pollution is not
right.
Frustrating.
A problem, yeah.
Is there a place within 100 miles of Madison where one can go?
North. Go north. Mm-hmm. Get into the national forest. Yes, it isn't as good as Washington State. It isn't as good as Nebraska or where I used to live, New Mexico. I guess my feeling is you have to just live with what you have and see what you can. And there are a lot of folks who right in the middle of big cities that, they're into astronomy. You might be limited to the moon and the planets. But
the other advantage we had in Washington State was altitude.
Exactly.
There are a lot of places, where you could go where, you climb up where it's like 4,000 or 5,000 feet altitude. And in the wintertime, the views of the sky are absolutely awe-inspiring. I've never been able to see anything close to that in Wisconsin.
It's true. We are lower down. I live near the Mississippi. I'm only about 900 feet above sea level. But from my backyard, my little town of Galesville, I can see the Milky Way. Not anything like I could in New Mexico, but I don't live in New Mexico anymore. Yeah, I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call, Bill. And, I can highly recommend the Shawamigan National Forest.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or the Nicolet. Mm-hmm. Those are great places to go. And you can go there in Shawamigan, for example, in the middle of nowhere. There is nothing. There are no lights.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce in Holman, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I guess I'm going to kind of reiterate what Paul said earlier. I'm also a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society.
Hey, Bruce.
And hello. Hi, Paul. What I wanted to say was that there are many amateur astronomy groups, clubs, situations situated around the state, you know, big cities, small communities. And one of the things that our group and most groups do is we actively seek to do outreach with the public. We love to post, you know, meeting times. We go out, find a dark site, set up. It's a wonderful opportunity if you're interested in astronomy, interested in the equipment, but maybe you don't know, you know, what it's all about, to look at a variety of different types of telescopes, take a look through them, talk to the owners. Astronomy people are exceptionally friendly, and you don't have to be an egghead to be into this this hobby. And as hard as we try to reach out to the public, by the same token, if you have an interest in this, go online, you know, check the activities listings in the newspaper, and actively seek out, you know, there might be an astronomy club in your town, your community, your city, and find out when their meeting times are. We welcome, you know, people to come in, join us at our meetings, and join us at our observing sessions. And I've been interested in astronomy since I was, a kid in junior high school. I grew up during the space race, and it's an amazing hobby. It really is. Where else can you travel billions of miles for free?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
Yes, and our club, and I'm sure others, just to add to what Bruce was saying, We do outreach with scouting groups at nature centers. We do events in the parks in La Crosse. Yeah, there's stuff going on a lot of time.
Thanks, Bruce.
You bet.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Ken in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. Great.
Just wanted to relay two incidences that I had experienced with the night sky while serving in the United States Navy. And you want to talk about lack of light pollution.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a couple hundred miles out to sea, and it is just unbelievable. The first one was I went out on the weather decks for a cigarette and, you know, went out and took a look at the stars and everything and enjoying that. And then with the phosphorescence from the white caps that were out there and the bow wave, you know, it made it look like there were stars below what would be the horizon, but you can't see it, that I got complete vertigo.
Wow.
I mean, I couldn't even stand up. That I had to literally get on all, you know, hands and knees and crawl back to the bulkhead and feel my way to the watertight door and open it and get back inside. And it was just, holy cow, you know.
Yeah,
But the second one, I was on a smaller ship, a recovery salvage ship, and the divers on board had made a temporary swimming pool on the aft deck. And I figured, you know, I was up late, yeah, I'm going to just go in for a quick dip and just chill out. And I was laying in the water, which was just seawater that was condensed from evaporation during the day, so it was extremely real high salinity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just floating in there. And it was kind of like those isolation chambers, mm-hmm. and you're just laying up looking at the sky. And the thing that was so amazing on that second incident was that, like, every 10 seconds or less, you're seeing, you know, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 1, 2, you know, shooting stars,
yeah.
you know, all across the sky, that it was like, you know, even through the brightness of the Milky Way, these shooting stars were just everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I only intended to go out there for, you know, 5-10 minutes, and I went back in, and it was an hour and a half, and I was just absolutely amazed at what you can see if you can get away from the light. And
sure.
I encourage everybody, just get away from, you know, known civilization, get out there, and join the Navy and see a real sky.
There yeah. you go.
Well, you know, that... Thanks for saying that, because the another amazing thing about astronomy, you can be out alone, which I often am, and if I know I'm going to be out for hours and hours because I'm going to photograph something, just lying back and watching the sky and being out there so long that you see it change as the world spins around, new things rise, others set. And then other times you can be out there with a huge group and just it's like we call them star parties, and you're mm-hmm. just sharing images and wow, it can be from one extreme to the other.
And Thanks again, Ken. The Facebook comment from David, and this is for the caller asking about Wisconsin stargazing locations within 100 miles of Madison. He might want to check out Williams Bay, Wisconsin. That's home of Yerkes Observatory. The local light pollution ordinances have limited light pollution there.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, very good idea. Let's call a caller asked, this is for clarification purposes, a caller asked that you clarify what the figure of 22,000 miles per hour really is. Is it the speed at which the Earth is going around the sun?
Yeah, I'm not sure I said 22,000. I think I said about 20,000, something like that. When I was a kid, we're 93 million miles from the sun. We take a year to go around the sun. A circle is, you know, 2 pi r, and then you divide that distance by the number. And it's about 20,000 miles an hour. If you had a calculator, you could do it yourself. That's how fast we're going around the sun. Of course, we're also spinning around once every 24 hours. And at the equator, the Earth spins at more than 1,000 miles an hour. And then the meteors themselves, they are also moving. Sometimes they're moving in the same direction as us, so they cross our sky slowly. Sometimes they're moving in the opposite direction, so their speed adds to ours. And it can vary quite a bit, but it's always quick enough that when they hit the atmosphere, they burn up, just like if a spaceship were to hit the atmosphere, it would burn up.
Scott in Madison, hello, thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm not sure if you mentioned it yet, but I think it bears repeating. Hubble Shields, the scourge of the night sky around here are the dusk to dawn lights. And if people would only, you know, shield the horizontal emission of light and direct it down where they most likely want it, it's a simple thing to do, and it would help immensely to cut down on light pollution in this area.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. And there's so many things that can be done. And I'll tell you, since I am going around the state a lot this summer and I'm driving through little towns at night, one nice thing that I'm finding is as new street lighting is being put up, they are putting up full cutoff lighting. That means light that only shines down. It doesn't shine out straight out. It doesn't shine up at all. It shines down. And you can't see these lights till you're almost on them. And then when you're under them, they're lighting things up just fine. Shining lights up at night is just a waste of money. It's just a waste of money, and it's not healthy for animals or us. So people are catching on, and now I'm seeing even some of these are LEDs, so they use even less power. It is a good thing to see. I just wish more people would do it, and you're right. Even the older lights, you can buy shields to put around them, and I keep thinking I need to buy one for my town and put it on the one that just lights my yard up like the day at night.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Let's see here. I was going to get a nice follow-up on another call earlier. Lois commented on Facebook, for the father who would like to create interest in astronomy for his children, my daughter received a card game called Wish Upon a Star from Winning Moves Incorporated. So Wish Upon a Star plays like Go Fish, but with cards that have constellations on them. They glow in the dark as well. She loved that game and begged to play for years.
Yeah, and there are so many ways in. And the cool thing about the constellations is the mythology and the folklore behind them. Most of them are animals or very interesting characters. There are stories about all of them and getting kids to be into that and then going outside and saying, here it is. It's been there for thousands of years. It's really up there. And then that leads them into the next thing. Well, what are they? What are the stars? And you can lead them wherever they want to go.
Absolutely. I got an email from Gary mentioning that that Pewaukee has an observatory as part of its library.
Oh, I was not. I love that.
Yeah, the Pewaukee Public Library, 2100 Main Street. And there's an observatory.
Yeah, cool. That's great.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. Well, you've got a number of engagements coming up, Paul. You want to have you got a few in mind where you're going next? And
sure, tomorrow I'm going to be at the Ripon Library at 6:30 p.m. to do a planetarium thing, and then at 9 p.m. if the weather lets us, we're going to have telescopes outside. The next day I'm going to be in Neillsville. Thursday I'm going to be back here in Madison, and then I'm going to Mount Horeb. You know, there's things coming up. If you go to my website, you can find out all of them. It's seeingstarswi.wordpress.com. And I also just put up a new picture on there, a new astrophoto I took on June 5th when I went to Arizona, the Kitt Peak National Observatory. They invited me to go down there and help people see the transit, and I took pictures of it, and there were a whole lot of folks there, and that is one great place. If you're heading to the Tucson area, I really strongly suggest that you go to a visit there. They're very much into public outreach, and frankly, there are rumors they're going to lose some funding. So if you have been there and you support them, you might want to contact your congresspeople and tell them keep funding this place because it's important.
And we will, on my Facebook page, we have a link to your events and your page as well, Paul. So it's always, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. I always love coming.
Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's an active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. And his service, which is really cool, it's called Seeing Stars. It helps adults and kids develop an appreciation for the night skies. He's really been busy this summer. Probably he may still have some more opportunities out there for you if you're interested in following up on that, for sure.
Yep.
Paul Kinzer, he will be back and be with us again. Lots to fascinate us in the night sky, as a matter of fact. And he's a great person, Paul, to get us excited about paying attention to the planets and the stars and a whole lot more. Coming up next, we'll talk about what other happenings in the sky. This time, the focus is on weather with our weather guy, John Martin. I hope you'll stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.